This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
For my talk today, I will be focusing on the resilience of permanent body modifications in southern Ethiopia, in particular the practice of piercing and stretching the lower lip in Mercy, where many adolescent girls and women still adorn their lower lip with a large labret called a debiatugo in the Mercy language. But my intention here is not to focus so much on the various symbolic and expressive possibilities of lip plates that Mercy women have communicated with me over the many years that I've worked with them. What I'm interested in today is situating this communication in the physical world by cultivating a sense of the plants and places that have been so vital to the success of lip plates in Mercy. When I began thinking about a more biocultural approach to my research, this began when I started a project in 2019 with Oli Sarali Olibui here on the left. Olibui is a Mercy educator and self-taught filmmaker, and we began working on a project within the Guardians of Productive Landscape series that started at Max Planck Institute for Social Anthropology in Halle-Saale, Germany. We worked with Mercy plant experts like Lugoni Banna, Bio Biseno, who you see here on the right, teaching us about root crops, but also many women and children in order to document the Mercy diet, food consumption practices, and local perspectives of famine foods, research that I'm only now able to resume after delays related to COVID, the civil war in northern Ethiopia, and so on. But as we began this first wild edible plant survey, the concept of cultural keystone species kept coming up, something defined by Cristancho and Vining, which refers to those plants and animal species whose existence and symbolic value are essential to the stability of a cultural group over time. Well, this fit well with the different ways in which Mercy men and women talked about certain species, including plant species, as being vital to their health and cultural well-being. One of these plants was lomai, a wild fruit that grows in the open savanna, in the understory of dry forests, along the riverbanks, and in dry woodland areas, often close to women's cultivation sites. I was familiar with the medicinal use of lomai already, having mentioned it in several previous publications in relation to lip plates, but I had not really situated it in its physical environment as also this important famine food and just how culturally important it was. Women at this time also referred to other culturally important plants like those used to pierce girls' ears, those used to carve wooden dowels or lip plugs and ear plates, the leaves to sand them, the sap to later repair pottery lip plates, the seed oils used to decorate and polish labrets, marula seeds, pumpkin seeds, many others. But lomai was repeatedly referred to as one of the most culturally salient plant species. Women also talked about the origins and places of healing clays within the context of Mercy, indigenous medicine and healing practices, but also within the context of lip plates, often referring to the power of clay to scare off men, but also in terms of how essential certain clays were to make lightweight lip plates that are comfortable to wear and pose minimal risks in terms of abrasions on the lip. So more recently, I've come to also draw on the concept of cultural keystone places, which Currier, Turner, and their colleagues define as places of high cultural salience for a particular group of people at a particular time and critical to their identity and well-being. These places include the locations of different clay quarries, which are also of great cultural importance to Mercy identity, health, and social well-being, which I'll return to in a moment. So I use both concepts of cultural keystone species and cultural keystone places to help frame my hypothesis that the resilience of Mercy body modification practices is rooted in more than the social norms and values, but in the Indigenous knowledge and resources that make them possible. Understanding the important role of such knowledge is especially relevant given the ongoing debates about the so-called harmful nature of lip plates, which I will just briefly touch on after first introducing the Mercy and then moving on to discuss the biocultural importance of certain Indigenous trees and clay quarries. First, we need a little context here on who the Mercy are. The Mun people are better known as Mercy, a name given to them by their pastoralist neighbors, but their self-designation is Mun. They speak Munen, a Southeast Sturmic language, which is from the Eastern Sudanic family of the Nilo-Saharan languages. Today, the Mun live sandwiched between the Omo and Mago national parks in hundreds of semi-permanent villages, covering approximately an area of approximately 2,000 square kilometers. Their remoteness has meant that until quite recently, they have been able to maintain their customary governance structure and agro-pastoralist way of life, and their many distinct cultural practices, from Donga stick fighting to unique body modifications like the stretching of earlobes and lips. Since 2012, much of their traditional grazing and hunting areas, as well as riverine cultivation sites, have, however, been partly cleared, crisscrossed with roads, and encroached on by large-scale sugarcane plantations. The purple area you see labeled Kuraz 3 on the map overlaps with Mercy customary lands. The situation has so far proven to be devastating for the Mun ever since the policies advocated by former TPLF government led also to the construction of hydroelectric dams upstream along the Omo, disrupting the natural flow of the river, as well as the riverine flood retreat cultivation that the Mercy and many of their agro-pastoralist and hunter-gatherer neighbors have relied on for many centuries. In recent years, this has led to severe food insecurity and development-induced diseases like Leishmaniasis. In fact, in 2023, there were a record number of deaths associated with visceral Leishmaniasis, which is directly linked to increased food insecurity along the Omo. Today, the Mercy population is less than 10,000, and within their cultural neighborhood, to use my colleague Christina Gabbert's term, the Mercy are surrounded by other Indigenous groups, mainly agro-pastoralists, but also hunter-gatherers like the Kwegu. And many of these groups also wear a diverse range of different types of labrets. But it is only the Suri on the western side of the Omo who wear labrets similar to those found in Mercy. Whereas in the past, both the Mercy and Suri wore large wooden lip plates. Today, the wooden ones have gradually been replaced by pottery lip plates. Overall, we also see a decline in pottery lip plates. But despite this decline, especially over the last two decades, lip plates are still considered an important and distinctive identity marker, one that marks womanhood and that differentiates the Mercy from other neighboring groups, in particular Mercy women from other women like the Me'en or Bodhi, the northerly neighbors of the Mercy who only wear a small wooden lip plug. But wearing a lip plate and being a Mercy are not mutually exclusive, since not every young woman will or can prescribe to such ideals. However, Mercy rhetoric is nonetheless full of persuasive statements and metaphors and metonyms about the strength, beauty, maturity, and long-term well-being of girls who endure this painful procedure and manage to succeed in fully extending their lower lips. Ultimately, however, the choice is left up to the girl. As I've mentioned, not every girl's lip will fit a lip plate, and not every girl today can commit or wants to commit to this arduous process. The cultural practice of wearing pottery lip plates in Mercy is more than merely cosmetic or aesthetic. As I write about elsewhere, it is constitutive of an adolescent girl's and woman's identity and reputation, as it embodies Mercy values of strength, courage, and the commitment to care for one's body, health, and social well-being. And these values extend to the health and well-being of one's children, one's husband, one's co-wives, one's cattle. This is why Mercy will make frequent rhetorical references to a girl with a large lip plate as attracting a wealthy husband. But the decline that we've seen over the last two decades, along with many of the normative practices associated with lip plates, there are various reasons that have mainly to do with have to do with internal factors, but also social pressures to abandon what is often perceived by outsiders as a harmful cultural practice. A topic that I delve into in more detail in a co-edited volume by Longman and Bradley, Interrogating Harmful Cultural Practices, which one of our presenters, Alan Grunbaum, also had contributed to. But I'm only going to briefly touch on this here within the context of this idea of harm and the origin of this idea, which I think is still firmly rooted in persistent origin myths about lip plates, the least persuasive of which, at least from the perspective of Hmong oral history, is the claim that Mercy lip plates originated in a way to disfigure women
in order to deter traders, slave traders, from taking them as slaves.
And although David Turton, the late David Turton, showed already half a century ago that this is not compatible with more narratives and oral history, such origin myths persist. If you type in the origins of lip plates into Google today, the following will pop up. There are lots of speculations on how lip plates originated, but one common belief is that it started because the men of some tribes in Ethiopia wanted their women to look uninteresting to foreign men during the time of slavery. Hence, it could be perceived as a response to colonialism. I'd like to remind the writer that Ethiopia was never colonized, Mercy women were never enslaved, and archaeological evidence shows that lip plates existed long before the likes of Mussolini or Arab slave traders, for that matter. So this conventional myth about disfigurement that portrays Mercy women in this negative light as powerless victims of a coercive practice, deprived of the ability to have control over or even the capacity or means to heal their own bodies, has led to these biased conclusions that lip plates are harmful. Such myths also continue to overshadow any recognition of the cultural significance of the lip plate as a metonym for strength, including the reproductive strength in both cattle and humans, but also the important indigenous ecological knowledge that can disprove the equally persistent myth of bringing harm to the health of girls and women. So some of my previous research has tried to challenge such stereotypical representations of Mercy women as having no rights over their own bodies and of inflicting so-called harmful practices on adolescent girls. But the point I want to make is that when we come to look at the real harm associated with lip plates in Mercy today, it's neglecting the indigenous knowledge that makes the piercing and stretching process possible. So through a closer examination of the cultural keystone species, in particular Lomai, but also cultural keystone places, I argue that these are vital to their success today. And by success, I'm also referring to their impact on women's health. In order for a girl to successfully pierce and stretch her lip, she needs the guidance of female experts who will take her through the process and ensure that she has a good supply of carved lip plugs, which must be changed daily in the initial stretching stages, and that she has plenty of lomai for wound care, which also requires specialized knowledge.
Bijalwi Biobiseno is
one of these Mercy experts who knows how to prepare everything from the first dowels that are inserted into a freshly pierced lip to all aspects related to the harvesting and preparing of lomai in order to care for the lip. As Bijalo explains, it's because, quote, because of the lomai that we are able to survive until our crops ripened. And it is because of the curative powers of lomai that mature girls can become wealthy. Not only is Lomai a vital food source rich in vitamin C that is available in abundance during the dry season, it's also an important antibacterial medicine used to heal cutaneous wounds, especially those cured when girls begin to pierce and stretch their earlobes and lower lips. While roasting Lomai fruits in the fire to prepare a medicinal ointment, she explains that without Lomai, piercing and stretching girls' lips and ears would not exist, just as the Mun would not exist as wealthy cattle keepers. Without Lomai, we would be Nidini, here poor or without cattle. So when it comes to this argument that oral piercing makes girls more susceptible to infection, Mercy girls and women are acutely aware of this fact, which is why a girl does not always engage in rigorous activities while her lip is healing, always careful to cover her freshly pierced lip with a leaf or cloth, and to frequently change her labret, applying Lomai, which, as I said, is prepared by burning the fruit and applying this oily black paste to heal the wound. This knowledge is also part of women's expert knowledge on how to not only pierce and stretch girls' lips, but to make pottery lip plates and to make them safe. One must know about the distribution for seed oils, barks, thorns, leaves, and dried grasses, all of which are used for the various purposes, from polishing and decorating lip plates to enhancing
different colors and color patterns during the firing and post-firing process.
They must also know the different types of clay and their locations. Debbi, which means clay in the Mun language, is used for ritual blessings and is painted on the bodies of people and cattle to prevent and cure afflictions. It is also a general category used to describe labrets made of clay. Dir is considered to be the best clay for making earthenware vessels and labrets due to its plasticity and porousness, making for more lightweight lip plates, which can be found, though, only in certain places along the Omo River, the Mago River, and Elma River, and in some areas with good soil. This type of clay is said to be rare in comparison to more common types of clay or earth, collectively referred to as gidangi or dora gidanga, literally brown earth, which refers to any type of soil. In the case of pottery lip plates, a succession of small wooden lip plugs are followed by a series of slightly conical-shaped pottery lip plugs called boko colonia, followed by increasingly larger lip plugs called bitai and loruktai. The clay quarries from where lip plates originate are also considered to be powerful sites that connect people to the land. Lip plates are inextricably linked to these important cultural places. To understand the importance of dir, one really must read Fire's Care's work on the healing arts of body painting, where she looks at how Mercy renew their relationship with a place by using the local earthy substances. Similarly, the pottery lip plate, also referred to as clay, also finds its origins in these special places where the powerful clays are found and used to make labrets and in turn enable girls to flourish and live successfully. Lip plates are places, the places of clay. Mapping out these cultural keystone places, which are critical to Mercy identity and well-being, is one of the important tasks ahead, especially at this unprecedented time of change in Mercy. In conclusion, while changing social norms within Mercy, but also outside pressures to conform to new ideals of beauty and what it means to be a modern citizen of the state, tend to dominate the literature on Mercy as having the most transformative impact on this gendered bodily practice, there's been little discussion about the expert Indigenous knowledge and materials required to safely pierce and stretch a girl's lip. My prediction is that without continued access to and protection of cultural keystone species like Lomai and cultural keystone places like those associated with special clay quarries, the health and social well-being of the Mersey, along with their ancient bodily practices like wearing lip plates, will be severely compromised. This prediction is not mine alone, but is inspired by Mersey women, in particular Bijalwi Biobiseno and many Mersey women who have stated on several occasions that without Lomai, girls' lip plates will cease to exist, and that without Dir, the special clay used for pottery lip plates, women's lip plates, as at least as we know them today, will disappear. As Bijalwi and also her sister Beke Biobiseno would often remind me, in the absence of Dir, however, we make and wear these lip plates from the brown clay to sell to tourists, even though they are heavy and pull your lip down. So this is not to conclude, then, that lip plates in southern Ethiopia are destined to disappear. If anything, they've become more ubiquitous than ever. Most girls and women know how to make them, even if they are more expertly made, or not expertly made, because of the hope that tourists will come. Today, they are more intricately decorated, more colorfully. They are also often heavier than the traditional black and red lip plates of the past. However, this added weight does not deter a widow and junior elder like Bijalwi Biobiseno, who has long since thrown her lip plate into the bushes, as she puts it, only today to insert the clay again when tourists come. Even though it pulls down her lip, Bijalwi tolerates the discomfort during these highly exploitative transactions between European tourists desperate to shoot the iconic Mersey women with lip plates, and women, widowed women like Bijalwi, who are desperate for cash to buy grain or sometimes even alcohol. In this rush towards the construction of modernity in southern Ethiopia, from fast-track tribal tourism to large-scale agro-development, their impact on the health and social well-being of indigenous communities like the Mersey remains neglected. Recognition that lip plates are in no way intended to harm or risk the health of and well-being of girls, as is often still assumed by outsiders, especially the media, but that they're intended to help a girl to stand up tall in the sense that she can hold her head high and feel strong and self-assured, which is made also possible by this indigenous knowledge and the keystone cultural species like Lomai and keystone cultural places where Dir, the special clay, is found. So I'd like to thank the women and men of Maki and also Marege, Northern Merseyland, especially Bijalwi Biobiseno, and so many other girls and women from Marege, as well as Olisrali Olipui, for sharing their knowledge and for their cultural mentorship and friendship over the years. Achalihau. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.